Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Let's hang out.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Les Hang Out, the podcast where you better get your orb ready. We are going monster hunting. From the West Coast, I'm Lee Holmes Foster.
And from the East Coast, I'm Ellie Brigida. I love how I never know what you're going to say. So that was so cute.
I should have said it with an Australian accent. If I had an Australian accent, I would have, but I
you
don't,
did your
so
best. You did I your didn't. Best. Yeah, yeah.
Crikey, get your orb ready. Is that okay?
That works. To those of you who have been with us through this whole journey, thank you as always for listening. If you're a new listener, welcome. We're excited to have you here. Here's what's happening this week.
This week in the Lesdom.
Hey, everyone. Just want to give you a quick heads up. There are a few little audio issues in Lee's audio for this episode. Unfortunately, her mic did not record anything on the bookend, so we just have a few of her Zoom audio in there, so it'll sound a little different than usual, but you still got her beautiful voice in there for the rest of it. Enjoy the episode.
This Week in the Lesdom is a place where we can touch base every episode about things going on in the podcast or otherwise, and we have so many things to tell you about. First of all, very exciting news. The Flame, was nominated for a Webby Award. We are a finalist for a Webby Award, which is so exciting.
So cool. So
it's
cool.
It's really, really cool. We are one of five finalists in the limited series scripted fiction podcast category. And it's a really big deal for us because, you know, we are up in the running against two shows produced by HBO, one show produced by Wolf Entertainment. So just some pretty big network-backed projects. And we feel like that little rinky-dink podcast that we just have always been. And so if you want to help support us, listen, yes, it requires you to register your email when you vote, but you can opt out of all the email, like spam emails, and you only have to vote once. I know that's the other thing. Like, people always get worried when, you know, you say like, vote for us during this, like next month. You do not have to go on and vote every day. You just need to vote one time, but it does mean that every vote is so, so important. So it really, really matters if you could just take a little bit of time to go and vote for us for our Webby. You can find the link at bit.ly/voteforTheFlame, and it would mean the world to us.
I also would like to say we're in second place right now for the votes. So you yes. have been voting, so thank you for that, but keep voting because we know our community can win this freaking thing. I'm happy we're nominated, but we're going to win. That's all I'm saying. And it's because of you. Also, speaking of all of you supporting us, I'm going to go on a quick rant, but it's fine. I think it is like we are the little podcast that could, but also we have a product and a freaking show that is worthy of being next to HBO produced shows. Even if we were not nominated for a Webby, I already knew that, but it feels good to like get that recognition, to be like, yes, we deserve to be in this category. And now somebody, a committee of human be of people who I don't know who they are, but they seem like they're important, have said we are worthy. And now
the Webby Academy.
The Webby Academy has said we are worthy. And also, like, that was totally thanks to you out there who funded our show before. We raised $26,000 to make The Flame, which is how we could make it as good as it was, which brings me to my next thing, which is we are in the middle of our crowdfunding campaign for Journey to the Heart, which is our next musical. We are doubling our ask because we know we can give you a good show and we want to give you an even better, more highly produced, more teammates on it. So it's not just us producing it. We've already hit $10,000.
Crazy. So it's insane.
Thank you all so much. At the same time in our campaign for The Flame, we were at $2,000. So this is a huge deal. You are You are all really coming through for us. We need you to keep donating, keep sharing at bit.ly/supportjourneytotheheart. We cannot thank you enough, but we really want to hit that $55,000 goal. So keep sharing, keep donating. We're going to make this thing.
We also can tell you're all excited about the dollar beanies, and we are excited as well. And we can't wait to see you all rocking them. So oh, yeah. It's going to be great. In the Greater Liz universe, lots of stuff going on lately. First, the GLAAD Awards just happened. Everyone looked so good. Everyone was so dressed up and living their best gay lives. And we love that for all of you. Also, lots of shows winning big, lots of movies winning big. Some of the ones that I know we saw, Saved by the Bell, for the episode. I think you watched it, Ellie, right? I didn't see it.
Oh, I love Saved by the Bell. I binged Saved by the Bell when I was sick in bed with COVID. And it was so cute. And they have really good queer rep. So I'm actually really happy that they won that award. They have a trans cheerleader. They have Ariella Barrera plays an LGBTQ teen. There's a whole storyline around bisexuality. They actually did a lot of gay shit really well. So I'm happy about that. Did you see Eternals?
I haven't yet.
Because I also saw Eternals. Same thing. I'm going to say should have been gayer, but did have some good gay stuff. And Single All the Way was the cutest Christmas film
I've ever seen. You know we love it. Everyone knows.
So I'm happy. I'm happy for the ones who won. I know some people were talking in our Discord that they want more queer women-led things to be nominated and to win. And I understand that as well. But I also do want to give props to the shows that did win because they did have some really great rep as well. It is also the 25th anniversary of Chasing Amy. And do you know why I put this in here, Lee?
Is it to encourage people to get the next tier of our Patreon so that we can record an episode on?
How'd you know? Well, it's also just because we have so many feelings on this movie.
A lot of feelings.
I really want to talk about it. We cannot talk about it until we get the bonus episodes unlocked on our Patreon. So at 150 patrons, we will talk about Chasing Amy. Right now, I'll just say it makes my blood boil.
Also, if we did Chasing Amy, would that be the first Kevin Smith movie we would cover? That feels wild to me.
Maybe. I mean, we haven't done a Should Have Been Gay on any Kevin Smith films, right?
That's crazy. We really need to get there at some point. So we will. We will. Also, other awards shows that were happening recently, Grammys. So shout out to Brandi Carlile for 5 Grammy nominations. That's
yes, I know. And wild. Brandi didn't win any, which is so depressing. But also, like,
she won in our hearts.
Brandi always wins in our hearts. Yeah, that's what's happening this week. Back to you, Ellie and Lee.
Thanks, Ellie and Lee. We are so excited to bring you episode 16 of season 5, Face Your Queers. And we are joined by a special guest tonight, Alex Markman.
Alex Markman is a queer screenwriter for TV and video games. Her recent projects include sci-fi's new original series, Astrid and Lily Save the World, and the upcoming video game, Gotham Knights. Hey, Alex, thank you so much for hanging out with us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
We are so excited to have you here. We are such huge fans of Astrid and Lily. It's just so cute and gay and just like,
I'm so obsessed with it. It's such a problem.
It is. And
I'm so happy to hear that. I got to tell you, I feel like my queer street cred has increased like tenfold just by logging into this Zoom call. So
I know we always say we do validate your lesbian card, your queer card. Oh, yeah. So if you need a little stamp. We got
mine's about to expire.
We got you.
So
we got you. Yours is about to expire. I'm sorry. How is that possible when you are like writing for one of the cutest, gayest shows out there right now? Come on.
That's true. That's true. My credentials are racking up again a bit.
Oh,
I guess,
yeah. Oh, so. Yeah.
How long has it been? Like, what was the wait time in terms of like from doing like writing all the scripts and everything to now with people getting to watch it? How long was that?
It was just about a year from the day we are recording this. It was about a year ago that I first met with Betsy and Noelle to talk. Those are the showrunners, by the way. It was about a year ago that was my first meeting with Betsy and Noelle to chat about the show. And then we started writing in May of last year. We wrote all through the summer, started shooting in the fall, and we wrapped in December and premiered in January. It was very fast.
That is so fast, especially as far as like TV development goes. I feel like there's people who spend like 5 years on a show.
Yeah, very much so. I've also worked in animation, and animation you can be looking at
years.
Yeah, video games it can be even longer. So, and I was actually in St. John's when I found out the premiere date, and I went, really? that soon?
That's amazing. You know? What was the catalyst for writing this story in particular?
The show in general, so I know Betsy and Noel said in another interview, they were originally developing something of a murder mystery along the lines of Search Party. At some point, it became a monster show. You would have to speak to them because that all happened before my involvement. And then for me, I mean, I grew up on Buffy. Buffy's my all-time favorite show. It's the show that made me want to be a TV writer. So when my agent told me that she had submitted me for this project that was essentially Buffy meets Booksmart, I went, okay, like, what do we have to do to make that happen, though? You submitted me, that's great, but do we sacrifice a goat? Like, what do I need to do?
do we howl at the moon, make a spell? Like, what are we doing?
Yeah, exactly. Do we say everything backwards? Yeah, like, I will do whatever I need to do to make this job happen. And thankfully it did, because it's truly been a dream experience.
That is so awesome. And yeah, like, it definitely, like, watching it has such Buffy vibes, which... Lee and I are also huge Buffy fans. So when, yeah.
As you should be.
So I saw this on your Twitter, but is this like somebody had written a review that said it's like Buffy, but without the male gaze?
Yeah, Time Magazine.
So like, how did that feel for you to be like, I love Buffy and I wrote this thing and now this is what they're comparing it to?
Oh, man. I'm a writer without words. It really blew my mind. I mean, by then we were starting to see the press, which was really positive. But seeing Time compare it to Buffy, and we made the print edition. It wasn't even just an online thing. We made the print edition. I have a copy of it that I'm going to frame and display in a place of honor. It's just mind blowing. And especially now, you know, seeing the fan comments because it's a teen show. It's a young adult show, but seeing the number of viewers in their 20s and 30s and 40s who grew up on these shows who just absolutely love Astrid and Lily, it's really, really meaningful. Yeah, dream job. That's all I got for you.
No, it is amazing too. And just to see, like, we don't need to dive into it, but we all know there's some issues with Buffy because of the time that it was written in and the person who wrote most of it. But like, to see that, but like with like queer, well, Buffy does have queer stuff, but like queer leads in the first season, all right? And like women who are dealing with their own internal shit, but also like through the show, they are written as such strong characters. I just think it's so, like, we have never seen that.
It's really amazing to be a part of. You know, from my first meeting with Betsy and Noel, they told me how important it was for them to have diversity both on screen and off. And we had women and non-binary people in nearly every key creative position, including every single writer, every single director. Both leads are plus size women, but their size is never the butt of the joke or even really the focus of the show. Like, I obviously, we can compare it to certain things in specific ways, like Buffy and Booksmart are the two examples people tend to go to a lot. But in a lot of ways, we really haven't seen this before. And to be a part of that from the ground up is so rewarding. And to see the way it resonates is so rewarding. It just really reinforces the need for stories like this. You know, we may not have seen it before, but we certainly need to see it again.
Oh, right? Absolutely. Listen, I mean, we hold our queer shows near and dear to our hearts, but this, like, it really is. I cannot say enough to, like, everybody these days how much I'm just like, there's no show out there like this. Like, there's no, this is, it's, there are so many ways in which it is doing things that just have not really been done, you know? And I think that that always provides so many opportunities for, like, representation people have never had, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's incredible. I want to start like digging in a little bit to some of the stuff that we want to talk about today. Because obviously, like, the premise of the show, right? Even though I'm like, the premise of the show is gays. That's all I ever care about. But the premise of the show itself, dimension, there's another dimension, there's a portal that's been opened, there are demons leaking into our dimension. I'm doing such a good job. Have me do your
LA. Yeah, I know. I was like, great. This is a very good synopsis.
There's an orb. There's monsters. There's kids. There's things.
Professional hype.
There
man
are
right
skin
here,
bags. But.
So there's this portal to another dimension that's been opened, and Astrid and Lily have to kill a bunch of demons, collect their body parts. It's just very normal. Collect their body parts, stick them in an orb to close the portal, and also be high school teenagers, right?
Yes. Doing all that, they must survive the horrors of high school,
yes.
Which is worse.
Which is worse, and which really, like, I mean, again, you know, this is, I think, the place where the show, to me, is the most like Buffy is in the... what is the monster this week and what is it really doing in terms of moving?
Yeah,
what does it represent? How is it moving forward the lives of these people and their stories that we are invested in? And, like, that's the stuff that I am such a sucker for. I love that when you're just like, what is the demon gonna do this week to help you come out, to help you do this, to help you get a boyfriend, to help you have sex? I don't know what.
That was a nice song, Lee.
You're welcome.
You guys should have that in your musical.
Yeah,
like that's
little
bit right
there. Da, 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 da.
So very Lin-Manuel would be so proud.
Yeah, yeah, that felt very
Lin.
We're
going to a fair. We're going to a dance. We're going to have sex in the back of your car. Okay.
There okay, so I know which one is Lee's favorite episode.
Yeah. Obviously.
Listen, I'm always a sucker for the first kiss episode. Come on.
And episode 7 is a real gem.
It's
I mean, they're all gems. Every time someone tells me they're about to sit down to watch a show, I'm like, oh, that's a good one.
Yes.
That's also a good one. I just, I love all the episodes.
It's so, like, this is my favorite part. No, wait, this is my favorite part. No, wait.
Yeah, so hard to choose. Yeah, I could never choose, but yeah.
Yes.
I'm a sucker for it. So they're hunting demons. They're hunting demons. They have, I think, superpowers that they, like, some dude in a back alley was handing out that week. That's
how you get superpowers, Lee.
Yeah.
Didn't you know?
It was a little scrape in the bottom of the barrel there. We have, like, your leg is strong. You smell shit. Here we go.
Their superpowers are their powers of seduction, Lee.
Yeah, so true.
They had their superpowers
and
all
friendship.
Along.
Yes. Maybe the real superpowers were the friends we
exactly,
had along
exactly,
the way.
Exactly, exactly.
And being gay.
Yes.
And being gay.
Yeah.
Yes.
I love it.
We all know that's a superpower.
Yeah.
Honestly,
it really is.
It really is. Has anyone else seen that the TikTok audio where it's like, really, it's just like it's like a gay guy and he's talking about how, like, it's just gay audacity where he's like, I just believe I can do everything. Like, I just think I'm going to be good at all things. And therefore, like, that's why we are so crafty and, like, DIY-y and why I can do everything. It's not inaccurate.
True. I have that, but not for DIY.
Hmm.
Like, I believe I can
do. I feel like I have selective gay audacity.
Yeah, small subset of things I have audacity for. Agreed.
Because also, like, I definitely have gay anxiety. So, like, they balance each other.
They counter. Yeah, they counter each other.
You know, the queer panic and the queer audacity.
What do you have audacity for? What are the subset of things?
Oh, God. I shouldn't have said that. Now I actually have to think about it. I mean, right now, you're catching me at a time when I feel pretty confident in my writing ability. You know,
as you
talk
should.
To me in a month. and yeah, I'm just going to stop there because it's too hard for me to think of things that
That's
I think
okay.
I'm good at.
It's a good thing to have audacity in. You are very good at it. So success.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, no, the writing is so good on the show. Like, that also is reminiscent of that, like, witty banter type stuff we get in Buffy. Like, mm-hmm. it's so
but
clever.
It's Gen Z, you know?
Yeah, yeah,
it's
yeah.
like,
but
it's such a different generational yes. type of thing. And I'm kind of here for it. I love it. Like, I
mean, we had to educate ourselves because none of the writers are Gen Z. So there were definitely moments of like, you know, do the kids still say this? What does Chugi mean?
You know, my God. Like what that. Literally, what does it mean? That's the weird. That is the weirdest word.
You know, when you have someone older than yourself and you're trying to teach them a new technology and you've showed them like 5 times and they're just not getting it. It's like every single time it just falls out of their head. That is me with new slang. Mm. I have been told the definition of Chugi like 5 times and it just doesn't stick. I've just had to accept that I have surpassed my ability to learn new words as a writer, which is a great thing.
It doesn't sound like a real word to me. Like, I literally did a voiceover audition where they had that in it and I was like, this word sounds like nothing. Like,
I'm pretty sure I said it wrong.
Sounds like
just
literally
now.
Nothing coming out of my mouth.
But you know what I love though is like, can you imagine, I'm trying to picture in my head, like picture Buffy and picture even Buffy and Angel having a conversation before hooking up, being like, I enthusiastically consent. Like, you can't.
I love that scene.
You can't do it, right? Like, it doesn't work. It just doesn't. Even Angel. And, like, that's probably the most we're going to get in that show. I mean, it just...
Yeah. Angel's also incapable of enthusiasm because so that's true. An emotion. So
true. And Spike's like, I committed sexual assault. I mean, it's a very different landscape is my point, and I'm here for it. I'm here for them. I don't even know what I was talking about anymore. I've lost track of
I'm
my
sorry,
own
Lee. I totally derailed you. But
we're just having that kind of a night, Ellie. This is what this episode's
going to be. It's fine. It's fine. We're talking about the show. We still are talking about the show. So we're doing fine.
I want to talk about demons. My point is one of the things that I loved, and I did love the fair episode, sure, but I feel like the episode that stood out the most to me so far this season, because we should preface this by saying we're going to have a whole discussion where like we still haven't gotten to watch the finale because it's not out yet by the time we're recording this, but we're so close.
So close.
So we haven't...
We'll do another episode.
Yeah. Yes. So the Memoragatchu episode, right?
Yes.
Where they... I'll give a little like... I'll give another elevator version.
Another rap?
Yeah. Oh my God. Let's do another version of this episode for anyone who hasn't watched it yet, just because it's important to like know the context of what we're talking about, right? So... there's a demon that's a jack in the box. And when you see the jack in the box and it like pops out and bah, in your face, you start going through these memory loops where you have to relive your worst memories. But they're not your real memories. They're like a fake, even worse version of your worst memory because monsters are terrible. That's like the worst thing. They're like, hey, what's your worst memory ever? Let's make it even more
even
bad.
Worse.
Yeah. And so you have to, like, face the demon in your fake memory first so that then you can, like, kick it into a fence post in real life, as, like, your mom always said. And so they do that, and we learn a lot about our characters in this episode, mm-hmm. and we learn things that, like, I think are so, so important for, like, the whole development of all of the characters, but especially for Candace and Lily, who are the ones I'm most emotionally invested in personally.
Mine
you don't
that.
Say.
Yeah, I'm so surprised by that.
Listen. Nobody could have predicted this for me.
No.
Nobody would have known.
Straight out of left field.
I just really like to surprise people, so I'm here for Candace and Lily's story, that's all. So, and I wanted to talk about it because I feel like there's a lot about, I thought that it was really interesting where you kind of have these two characters who have like a lot of baggage, just some baggage to deal
just
with.
Just a little.
My alternate name idea to title this episode was going to be like Carry On Baggage.
Query on baggage.
Yeah, yes. That's good.
And you're welcome. I should have done that, you know.
Screwed up. It's not too late.
But I'm really curious, like, from the perspective of when you all sat down to, like, plot out the season, plot out these characters, plot out these storylines, because one of the things that is so different is, like, it is so different to have a storyline where you have, like, hey, who here's the, you know, unpopular high school kid who's, like, kind of nerdy and, like, you know, doesn't get invited to the parties, all of this stuff. Like, here's the, I have one best friend and that's good enough for me. Like, it feels like it's flipped in so many ways, right? That it's not like, oh, I'm like pining after the popular girl who like just doesn't even notice me and then I'm gonna have a big crush on her and like pursue her and all this stuff. No, it's like the total opposite, where it's like, hey, here's Candace. She's unhappy and stuck in heteronormativity, and she has a giant crush on that kid, right? And I want to know about, like, how did that happen, and what was, like, the planning discussions around that in terms of, like, how do you even start to approach that when it's not something that's really been done before on television?
So, all credit to our wonderful showrunners and creators, Betsy and Noel, for planting those seeds. The idea that Candace and Lily used to be friends and there was some sort of schism that caused them to go their separate ways when they were younger was built into the show from the beginning. I think Candace actually references it in the pilot. She says something about, you know, ever since you met Astrid, we haven't really hung out or something like that. I'm paraphrasing, obviously. So that was built in from the beginning. And there was always that moment with them in the pilot. And I remember reading it in the pilot and having this moment of like, am I hallucinating? Like, are we really doing
are they?
Because, you know, all queer people are taught from such an early age to mine their media for any shreds of representation. And with Astrid and Lily, it was just there from the first script. And I remember thinking, like, am I hallucinating? Am I imagining this? Are they really going to tell this story? And I asked the Betsy and Noel in my first interview, and they were like, no, you're not imagining it. We absolutely want to tell this story. We want Candace and Lily to find their way back to each other. I was like, well, sold.
I'm in.
Yeah. So when that was built into the show from the very beginning, we didn't quite know what that schism was, but Betsy and Noel knew they wanted to explore it in the memory episode, because what better place to do so? And yeah, when we sat down to break episode 5, we started talking about, well, you know, what would that conflict look like? How did it come about? And how can it come about in a way that we don't essentially throw Candace under the bus? Because we don't want her to just be a basic mean girl. There needs to be more to it than that. And I think we really found it when we realized that something needed to be off about the memories, that you needed, yes, they were being forced to relive their worst memory, but something was off, like something wasn't quite right about it, which is a very real thing that trauma does to your brain. You will often remember or misremember things or believe things were your fault that weren't, because that's how trauma messes with you. Yeah, that's kind of how that came about. But yes, it was built into the DNA of the show from the beginning that Candace and Lily had a relationship when they were younger and would find their way back to each other as teenagers, and that would become a romance.
Well, and it's so perfect too, because I think we just recorded another episode where it's like something that we talk about, because it comes up a lot on the show, is this idea of like friend breakups, right? Like, yes. A lot of queer people have these like
very intense friend breakups. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they weren't necessarily friends. Like, they were friends, but yeah.
Yeah. And the thing about friend breakups, and I'm starting to see some stuff about this, but we have so little language to discuss it. Like, even just calling it a friend breakup, you know, a breakup that's framing it in all of sort of romantic language, right? The same language we use for our romantic relationships. It's not really something that we've discussed historically. And often, frankly, I mean, my friend breakups have been way worse than my romantic breakups. That makes it sound like I've had a lot of breakups. I haven't. But the ones I have had, it's so much more painful to lose a friend. I think maybe because when we enter into a relationship, we go into it knowing that this could always happen, that, that they may not be, quote unquote, the one, if you believe in that type of thing. But you don't expect that from your friends. In a way, we kind of take our friends for granted and believe that they will always be there for us. And when we're forced to confront a different reality, that's very painful at any age.
Yeah. Well, and there's also, I think, as like for queer people, it's so much more common to see, you know, like, I feel like it's the kind of thing that when queer people watch this show and watch that episode, that like, I don't think it is surprising to any of us to say like, well, yeah, of course Candace was so upset. Candace probably saw something in herself that was represented by Lily and her moms, you know, and having that immediate shame associated with it from her mom of saying like, you can't hang out with those people. Right. That it's like watch. I mean, it's just like watching little Candace just like sobbing on her birthday. And you're like, ugh.
God, I know. I was so mean to all the characters.
Because they're gay and she's gay and it's making me sad now. And like,
I also do really like I've talked about this before on the show. Like you're saying, like she's not a basic mean girl. Like, I feel like that's like the most important kind of way to treat those characters, because like sometimes you have a person who's like been so horrifically mean to this character, and then we're supposed to be like, and just kidding, they love each other, and it's like,
yeah,
that doesn't sit right with me. So I like that there's a bit more nuance to it, to the point where like even in some of like the earlier episodes, like Candace starts being pretty nice to Lily comparatively. Like, you don't really have like this like harassment that we have in some other shows where it's like, that was my bully for years, but now I love her. And you're like, this does not compute.
Yeah, not at all. And I'm particularly not a fan of the trope of the homophobe who turns out to be secretly gay. Not that that is never the case. It absolutely is. But, you know, if any of my childhood bullies showed up on my dorm, like, surprise, I loved you the entire time, I'd be like, okay, bye.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, good for you. I'm glad you realized that. But like, I'm not interested.
Congrats on your journey. Take it over there.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not instant forgiveness. And I do, I also really like that we still, there's a really lovely moment at the end of the other episode that I got to write, which was episode 9, where Astrid and Candace finally talk a little. And Astrid straight up says, look, this does not make all the years of what you put us through go away. Like, you were mean to me, but you make Lily happy. I'm willing to give you a shot. Also, if you hurt her, I'll cut off your head, which is just, you know, standard
bestie stuff. Just best friend talk. Yeah.
But I do really love that we explore those layers with Candace, because we didn't want her to be a basic mean girl. That's a really layered and interesting character, and there's so much going on with her, and I'm really glad that we were able to explore that, and also that people are that it's resonating with people, that people are seeing it.
Yeah, for sure. And I like too that like it's like she also is like, yeah, I've always been cool about my sexuality, like I know that I'm fluid, like I know these things. It's just like this scenario with you is a little tricky, and then you have that whole like scenario, but it's like, at least we, like, I agree, it's like, you're not like, she's been suppressing all of her gay feelings forever and blah blah blah. Like, both of these characters pretty actively know they're queer from the beginning and then are just figuring it out with each other, which I personally prefer. But I'm also, we've said this many times, coming out stories totally valid. I just really like seeing when they're not. I just really
it gave me like, it gave me April in like Teenage Bounty Hunter vibes, you know, being like, right. I know this about myself. I know this is not super like the time where I'm planning to like explore this part of myself, you know, like I'm gonna date the jock and have the relationship everyone expects of me right now. But like, yeah, it doesn't feel like she's like putting on the blinders and being like, I don't see it, blah, 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 nothing's here. Like,
and that it was a conscious decision of the writer's room to make none of our queer characters hide their sexuality, because I personally am so, I didn't want to tell a story about queer shame.
Yep.
I just didn't. And it's not because that's not a valid story, and it's not because people don't need to see that story, but we have seen that story so many times, and if people need to see that, it is out there. We had the opportunity to do something different with these characters. And also, you know, the moment in episode 8 when we realized Lily was assuming that Candace wasn't ready to be out, but she realizes, oh no, you just don't want to tell people you like me. I mean, that is a much bigger ouch than realizing.
Oh, it's a sucker punch, man.
Yeah, that is a gut punch. If Candace was not ready to be out, you could almost kind of be with her in that moment, because, you know, we've all been in those scenarios where we're not ready to tell people these aspects of our identity. Whereas here, Candace frankly screwed up. I mean, she literally says that she screwed up and she needs to make it right, which is a much more interesting arc for the character. And it's just different. You know, why do all queer characters have to be ashamed of their sexuality? It just drives me crazy. So I'm really grateful to have been part of a show that was very passionate about doing something different with the queer characters.
Well, and it's also like I don't even know what I want to talk about first. I have so many thoughts in my head right now. So I'll go with, let's talk a little bit, because again, I love this idea of like how the demons in the show like help kind of convey all of these things. I love that they're having that discussion. I mean, listen, I love and I hate it, because the hair cocoons, just miserable. It was giving me the Ring vibes, that whole monster, and I was not here for it. But
I mean, that is what we were going for, so at least we were successful. I'm sorry. Sorry we traumatized you.
As a millennial of a certain age, listen, I don't need that.
Too many, traumatizing
life.
Sleepovers where they put on the ring.
I left the ring back in 2003 where it belongs, damn it, okay?
Okay, but it also allowed us to have a lot of fun in that the kids needed to capture it in a video camera, and they're like, what's a video camera?
Oh my god.
That is one of my personal favorite moments of the entire series. I'm just throwing it out there. I know hair cocoons, you don't have to like them, to each their own, but come on.
Incredible.
But here's what I did like about the hair cocoons, is I liked, again, where it's like, it's just small things sometimes, like having an episode where every single one of your characters is so wrapped up in themselves. And then to have the crux of that episode be them all wrapped up in themselves with their little heads poking out, having these conversations about each other's feelings and stuff, hanging like from these like disgusting hair cocoons. Because it is, right? It's like you have this whole episode where it's like, Astrid is pissed at Lily because she's keeping a secret. Lily is, like, not pissed at, but, like, hurt because Candace, like, doesn't want to do any sort of, like, PDA or, like, do anything where anyone else can see it. Like, Tate is hurt because his girlfriend is into someone else. Like, Candace is being completely self-involved and like forgetting everyone else's feelings. Eggs is there. I don't know. There's a lot happening.
Love Eggs.
Eggs is
so
possibly
deeply
one of my favorite characters.
He's one great of my favorite characters to write. Michael plays him beautifully. He's just such a gem. Every time I deeply love Eggs. And he's the one there screaming, hey guys, maybe we should deal with the monster. It's just,
it's incredible.
The entire scene is beautiful.
But like, but what a great, again, right? Like, what a great use of a demon. Like, what a great use of that whole imagery of it, and being like, hey, like, get out of get out of your own head. Like,
and once
other
again,
people exist as well. Look at them. They're hanging in front of you in their own cocoon.
And once again, honestly, hats off to Betsy and Noel, the creators of the show and our showrunners. They wrote that episode and they had such a clear vision for it from the beginning. You know, episode 8 was going to be the monster in the script is called the Wet Child, but we never actually say that out loud. It's disgusting.
Yeah. The moist kid.
Yeah.
Like, no.
Moist hairy kid.
We just
kid.
Lost
Love
like
it.
Half your listenership because we said
yeah,
that.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry, everyone.
But they had such a clear vision. Episode 8 was going to be the Wet Child. There were going to be these hair cocoons. Everyone was going to be forced into a room and secrets were going to be revealed. Also, it was going to be a Breakfast Club homage.
It's
they had
the
such...
Breakfast Club like direct parallel. Like that first intro setup scene, I was howling. Like I was just absolutely so dying at Tate in his little jacket and everything, and Sparrow with oh god,
with the fingerless
yes.
gloves.
Yes, it was perfect.
Everyone killed it. Danishka directed that episode. Like the music was all very 80s. All the costuming. It was just everything about it was perfection. And also I have to give a shout out to Grace, the adorable little girl who played the Wet Child.
The adorable sweetest,
the sweetest thing on earth, but god was she terrifying.
Oh my god, a few too many eyes just and some wet hair can really, you know, scary up what I'm sure
a cute,
is a cute kid
very
under
very
there,
cute
so.
Kid yeah
oh absolutely adorable and just the sweetest thing terrifying on screen.
That is so funny. Like how do you even audition for that role too?
I truly don't know. I know a couple of the monster auditions involved like checking their shriek, like could
nice,
they make a monster
nice.
Kind of cry. I truly don't know what went into casting the Wet Child, although she has a great growl because at one point she was we were taking pictures backstage and I asked her to snarl at the camera and I never slept again, so
that must have been her audition.
Yeah, that was
yeah
probably it.
I love to I'm like the demon from the first episode, the tearjerker, is like so he reminds me of literally like he reminds me of the demon from the musical episode in Buffy.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
right. Like very sweet. Like campy, and yeah, the fact
well,
that he calls
the
himself
first...
daddy is too much.
That was the first script I read, right? And that was all in the pilot. You know, is this monster kind of like a sexy daddy?
Yes.
And once again, I said to my agent, I was like, seriously, who do we have to send a gift basket to? Like, I need to work on this show. You don't understand. My life will be incomplete if I don't get to write for this show. It's just. Yeah, oh god, the monsters are so fun. Tearjerker is just incredible, and yeah.
You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
So much fun.
I was trying to remember, like, what my other direction of thought had been, because there was something else that I wanted to talk about. And
you were just talking about the demons guiding the story.
Well,
and then
yes,
we were talking about the hair cocoons and everyone's wrapped up in themselves.
The story was one thing. There was
the play was the other, right? Romeo and Juliet down under. Definitely.
Listen, as Ellie and I, who both grew up as
theater kids.
Like, Romeo and Juliet down under is, I cannot even explain how much I hate love it. Like, I
there is nothing that I love more than a play within a TV show.
Oh God. And
it just gets me every time, especially when it's a ridiculous Shakespearean play. Have you ever seen the film Get Over It?
No.
They do a musical.
I now need to.
A musical version of Midsummer Night's Dream, directed.
Oh God, I was just
by
on
Martin
a podcast
Short
talking about this.
Yes,
I was just on You Made Me Queer, and Trevor was talking about this, and I pretended to know what he was talking about.
Connect me with Trevor because I will sing every song to him.
I'll make it happen happily.
It is like such a quintessential like high school theater experience to do that show where someone's just like, we're going to do this, but here's the twist.
Aren't we
okay,
clever?
So I need to tell you something. I just went on this whole Twitter thread about this because people were demanding to know. I tweeted, so of course, part of episode 9, spoiler alert, is that Michelle changes the ending of the play opening day. That happened to me.
Did it really?
In high school. Our teachers changed it in the middle of the performance.
How are you going to do that?
So
to anxious theater kids? Rude.
I did this whole, I wanted to make a TikTok, but I'm also a millennial of a certain age and I don't understand TikTok, so I think Twitter
for it. Oh, we can teach you. We got you. Don't worry.
Still.
Oh God. Yeah. I mean, to summarize, basically, the school musical was a really big deal at my school, and we would put on, in addition to putting on performances for the community and for our school, we also put on performances for the theater schools or the elementary schools whose kids would eventually come to us for high school. But for some reason, those performances could not be the full length show. It had to be a shortened version. But it's high school theater. Everything came together at the last minute. So rather than have time to rehearse two different versions of the show the night before the first performance, the teachers sat down and just came up with a list of things they felt like they could cut from the show.
Oh my God.
Which is super not allowed, by the way. And if anyone from like Music Theater International is listening, we absolutely did not do this.
Yeah, you cannot change one word in those things.
You're not supposed
to change it. You can't even try to censor it or anything. Like, you cannot change it.
So the show was Rodgers and Hammerstein Cinderella, and we just came in the next day and there was literally just a list up in the dressing room. Yes, dressing room singular. of all the songs and scenes that we wouldn't be performing. We never rehearsed any of the transitions. Like, we just had to go with it.
That is crazy.
But because they never rehearsed the shortened version, they also never timed it, which meant that, so Rodgers and Hammerstein Cinderella is a 3-act musical. We were maybe halfway through act 2 and the stage manager runs backstage and goes, the buses are here. We have to wrap this up now. So
oh my God.
They slammed the curtain shut. They shoved the prince and the king onto the apron and told them to ad lib while we set up for the wedding scene. They had to improvise the entire second half of Cinderella. Like, we hadn't done the search with the shoe. We hadn't done any of the drama with the stepsisters. I think we barely got to the ball.
Oh my God.
And someone yanked Cinderella off stage and shoved her into a wedding dress. She had no idea what was happening. And the prince and the king just sort of stood there on stage in the spotlight going, guess what? We found the girl. That is very good news. Hear ye, hear ye, a royal wedding.
Oh, wow. My God.
Is that better or worse than crikey, they're getting married by a kangaroo?
Okay, I need you to know.
That's
the
worse.
Kangaroo. So I am the lucky little writer who got to have the play in her episode, and I am forever grateful for that because I am also an ex-theater kid. I mean, I should say all the writers were theater kids, so coming up with the play was just, so much fun. And that was a whole process in and of itself, the way we arrived at Romeo and Juliet Down Under. But my writing process for Romeo and Juliet Down Under was literally just to sit at the computer very late at night and to put down increasingly insane things on the page just to see what Betsy and Noelle would take out. Because for anyone not familiar with the TV writing process, yes, individual writers typically write the episodes, but the showrunner will always do a showrunner's pass before the draft goes out. So, you know, they do a quick pass, make sure everything sounds right, that everything's happening the way they want it to. That's very typical. So I threw things in thinking that they would yank a couple out at least before they went off to the network and then to the actors, the most insane of which being, what if the kangaroo performed the wedding? They not only did they not take that out, they took nothing out.
Wow.
Oh my God.
Well, kudos, because I cannot tell you, like, I don't think that's probably the part of this show where I laughed the hardest is every line of Romeo and Juliet Down Under. Like,
it's so good.
Just destroyed me. I don't know. I think it really is that it's like, if you've ever done like a high school theater production, like, I don't think anybody can sit through that and not just be like crying, laughing. Like, I don't, like, even just stupid stuff of like the, what do they say where they're like, doth thou bite your thumb at me, mate? And I was like, oh my God.
I do bite my thumb. I
cannot. I cannot do it. It's just, it's like, It was great. Well,
that's so bad.
Bravo.
Shoehorning in the Australian slang was particularly fun, man. Because, like, I'm not actually the biggest fan of Romeo and Juliet, but I really like a lot of the poetry in Romeo and Juliet, and just completely bastardizing it with whatever Aussie slang I could think of. And even when when I told the writer's room the story of my teachers changing the play on the day, and I was like, hey, what if Michelle did that? And they went, great.
Oh my God.
I reached out to my cousin who used to work as a doctor in Australia, and I was like, so is there any like weird Australian medical slang you can inform me of? Also, wedding traditions. and she told me, but I couldn't tell her why.
And then the episode
aired recently, and I got to reach out to her. I was like, do you remember last year when I randomly asked you this stuff and I couldn't tell you why? The episode's
out. Okay, look, because I'm gonna use this to segue us slowly back to Candace and Lily, which, you know, I'm just dying to do. But, like, even the way in which Candace uses that opportunity where she's like, she's standing off stage, I'm gonna, like, fuck the script. I'm just gonna, like, talk at you now. And X is there like, it's not the right scene. Like, that's not even what happens. And, like,
and it's such an epic romantic moment. Like, you know, all on the page, she drops the accent, she sees Lily, she just pours her heart out to her with some of the most romantic poetry the bard ever wrote.
Yeah.
And then Eggs is like, that's the wrong scene.
That's the wrong scene. And saying it while they're both on stage, which is just, it's like, it's all just the very high school theater of it. But I do want to talk a little bit about, because one of the other things, I think part of why I love their storyline so much, and I love watching them both kind of like find their way through it over the episodes, is I feel like it's not just saying like, oh, hey, we have two fat heroes who are both girls who are not the most popular kids in school and all this stuff, but like, having one of those characters, like, I'm just thinking about what it must be like for so many girls watching this show to see that character. Like, when she has that whole speech where Lily's like, you know, I may not be my biggest fan, but, like, even I know I deserve better than this. And to have that person say that to the Candace of your school, you know, and to be like, hey, I am not your dirty little secret. Like, I am not a thing that you get to be ashamed of, because, like, that's not being into me. Like, for so many reasons, whether it's that, like, because you're the outcast, whether it's because you're gay and they have their own things they're working through, like, it doesn't matter what the reason is, like, that's not what liking someone is. That's not what showing up for someone is. And, like, that, like, I feel like that's the thing where I'm like, look, like, there have been shows with fat leads, like, whether or not they've been handled as well, let's not get into it. There have been, like...
It's another episode.
Yeah. Another episode on, like, listen, are you, like, the quirky fat best friend who gets, like, tossed the nerdy guy at the end? Okay, fine. That in and of itself, like, that moment is just so important. I'm like, that's so necessary. Like, kids need to see that. Teenagers need to see that. Like, need to see somebody able to believe enough in themselves to say, I deserve better than what you're offering right now. No, thank you.
That line has a lot of weight. Actually, the TV Junkies just released an entire article about that single line, which blew me away as the writer of that episode. But it's a line, you know, I feel it deeply, let's say. I believe, you know, we've all been in those situations, and I am someone who still struggles to sometimes say, you know what, I deserve better than this, even if I know it, right? And yeah, to have that moment is really powerful. And of course, then Candace's journey throughout the episode is to learn what it means to show up for somebody. I've gotten so many messages on Twitter from people just resonating so deeply with that moment and how much they needed to hear that. And as you said, needed to hear it from a character like Lily, mm-hmm. which is so, like, meaningful to me as the writer, to know that it's resonated with so many people. It's really special.
Yeah. And also, like, to see where Lily comes from the beginning of the season to that moment where you literally mm-hmm. have seen her crying in a car because she feels so, like, worthless. Like, am I a monster because people say I am? And, like, to that moment is so powerful.
Yeah, that's the journey we really wanted to take Lily on in season one, was to see her become comfortable in her own skin and become confident in herself. And I think by episode 9, we're really starting to see that. And certainly in episode 10, you'll see it as well. And it's really amazing to see the character go on that journey. And, you know, Sam just plays her so beautifully. I'm so proud of her.
Yeah, also, this is, like, sort of random, but not. I read it that this was Sam's first TV show. Is that correct?
It is Sam's first TV show.
Crushed it. She crushed it.
Right? So, fun little fact for you guys. I was Sam's camp counselor when she was
a little baby actor.
I'm not kidding.
Gosh.
At a drama camp for a couple summers. So I hadn't spoken to her in years by the time the show came about. And then I remember seeing the casting for Astrid and Lily. And I went, wait, I know that name.
That's amazing.
So I knew her when, and I'm so proud of her. What a star.
I love it. I love also, I'm like, you're from Canada, right?
Yes.
I'm like, all of you know each other.
Well, I mean, we're also, like, Sam and I we're from places that are not terribly far away from each other, but, you know, we don't all know each
other.
Canada's a pretty big place.
I know. It's really just, like, all of those people in Toronto.
Yes.
There's
all the queer actors in Toronto. Like all the
that
like...
is a small world. Yeah.
That is true.
Yeah.
That is true. I'll grant you that one.
And then actors who are also then on sci-fi.
Yeah.
Which I love. This like.
Well, I mean, the Canadian TV industry is comparatively small. It's really. It's like 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, except it's more like 2 degrees of Degrassi.
Yes.
In the Canadian industry.
Or it also, it always reminds me too of like how, you know, you're always like, a British actor, who were they in Harry Potter? Right? It's like that kind
yeah.
of small.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that though. That is so cool.
It's absolutely wild. But yeah, I'm so proud of her.
That's amazing. Was there anything else you wanted to talk about with the demons, Lee?
I mean, listen, there's so many things I want to talk about. There's like that whole episode, because then there's doppel people and it's like, oh, do you even actually see the people around you? And there's like their stand-ins. And I'm just, listen, I have a lot of feelings about everything always. Ellie, you know this about me.
I know.
I mean, we could talk about the doppelgang. I love the doppelgang.
Listen, the doppelgang, I just thought was like, again, it's just great. It's a great use of like, are you being seen? Do people even notice that it's not you? Like, also, she was creepy as shit being the doppel Lily.
Wasn't she so good?
It was off-putting.
Like, so creepy. I was on set for most of those scenes. And I mean, remember, this is someone that I knew when she was like 8. And I'm watching her play this super creepy version of herself. It's so unsettling.
Even when she's not doing anything, she's just standing there. I'm like, how do you look so scary all of a sudden? I don't
and just
like
staring
it.
At a wall. Like,
reminded me of like my our dog is like basically completely blind right now, and it like reminded me a lot of her. Sometimes she's just like, I want to go outside, and you're like, that's the wall. But okay.
Oh no.
What I really love about the doppelganger monster is that Astrid and Candace end up being sort of mirrors of each other in that episode, and that they are both so mixed up in their own crap with Astrid and Sparrow and Candace and her popularity that they're not clocking what is going on with Lily. They're just so in their own heads. And when they get out of their own heads, they realize, well, Astrid realizes, Candace doesn't quite realize what's going on with the doppelgangers. At least they fill her in later off screen. But, you know, it's not until they both of them are able to get themselves out of their own heads and clock what's going on around them and the way their actions affect other people that they're able to overcome the monster. And they have these really parallel journeys in the episode that I just absolutely love. For them, because, you know, obviously Astrid and Candace, there's still a little bit of tension there at the end of 9, although we are starting to see it melt. And yeah, I just love that for them, because, of course, as soon as Astrid thinks Lily, you know, she explains it away. You're not acting like yourself. You're really quiet. It's because Candace hurt you. But as soon as she allows herself to really clock what's going on, she's like, oh, duh. Right. Which is such a beautiful moment. And then they turn out to be a doppelgang because we had to make everything worse.
Well, so. And someone had to get Val. I mean, come on. Otherwise,
oh, God. What's even the Val. Point?
Val.
I love Val. I just love her so much. And Christina, again, plays her to perfection. Just every high school theater kid, grown-up theater kid, seeing themselves in this poor girl who
I
gets
mean,
attacked by
yes.
the monster every time.
Every time.
You gotta love a running gag, you know?
Yeah. It's just, oh, so good. And yeah, we had to make her the crocodile. We were really mean to Val. Oh, it's just so, yeah, it's... so much fun.
But,
it was a really
but
fun
mean
moment.
In the
but
best way. Mean in the great
in the best
way.
Way.
You know?
Yes. Before we go into our Q&A, I mean, if people have listened all the way through, then we gave them a lot of spoilers. However, what if they have not seen Astrid and Lily Save the World? What's your short pitch? Like, here's why you should watch.
Well, you know, we've already kind of covered the premise of the show and stuff. So rather than rehashing that, which you did so beautifully in song.
You're
you did great.
You're welcome.
I instead, my pitch for it comes from the writer's room, which is that all of us talked about a desire to create the show we needed when we were growing up, whether that was as someone who is fat or someone who is queer or someone who's BIPOC. We wanted to create the show we each needed growing up, and seeing, you know, Candace and Lily and how their arc has come about and just the entire final product of the show, I can say this is very much the show I needed when I was growing up. So I hope it would be that for you too.
Beautiful.
That's my pitch.
It's a great pitch. I agree. So make sure you watch it.
I mean, it could have been a little more musical, if you ask me, but like, it was fun. It was fun.
I'm about to be in tears here.
And I agree. I do think that's why I'm like so into the show. Is like, that's what it hits me as. Is like this. It's a show that I think people need to watch. Like whether or not it's even the show that you needed, it's a show you need to watch because it's just like, it's so important for people to see that, you know? Because I do think it's important. Like I think, and so much of what you just said too is it's like, absolutely. Like somebody who grew up fat with the representation that we had when we were kids. I mean, Jesus. Like, obviously you need this.
It's still
show.
Not great. Let's
like,
no. be honest.
No. Like it's improved marginally. It's so much better than it used to be, and it's still not great. But it's also like, I cannot think about like how important it must be for everybody to see how into Lily Candace is.
I saw a tweet. This was like mid-season too. They hadn't even gotten together yet, but someone tweeted, "You can see Candace's crush from outer space."
Yes, yeah. Like so obviously, yeah. It's like so clear. But like that's so important too. Is I'm like, yes, absolutely. Like you need to see Lily having the self-confidence to say, like, I deserve better. Like this is not okay. But it's also so important for people to like see a character being like, hey, you're fat and gorgeous and funny and smart and I'm into you. And like, like that is also important for people to realize.
So
like,
important.
Yes, that's also an option. And like what I think we have done historically over and over again is to like shame people when they're into that
very
person.
Much so.
And I'm like, it's just, it's so important all around. I can't stand it. Anyways, watch Astrid and Lily, people. Like, it's okay.
Yes, please.
It's a totally fine show. I don't feel strongly about it one way or another.
You know, I do want to say on the note of, you know, shout outs to the romantic leads. I know we're not here to talk about the straights, but I feel like we have to give a shout out to Sparrow as well, because he is also very much that person for Astrid. He's just into her from the beginning. You know, he doesn't care about her social status or her size or anything. He is just so completely into her. And again, that's very much something we wanted to show. So anyway, we don't have to talk about the straights, but I felt like I would be doing
a
disservice.
2 seconds, and I think that was very generous of us. Like, good
we
job.
We do still love them. We do still very much love Astrid and her confidence as well.
Yes.
Like, when she asked Sparrow out on a date, like, love that for her.
But also, all I want to do is watch the finale and see Candace and Lily go to a dance together, and I'm going to die.
I mean,
it's
yes.
just going to be me dying the whole episode, and I'm already ready yes. for it. Yes,
I also
basically.
Was going to say, before the finale is, well, people are going to see the finale when this episode comes out. But just in general, we've already posted on Twitter. We will post again and again. But people need to be watching these shows so that we get more seasons. Because
yes,
I can't
please.
Handle if we don't get another season like so
Neither
many
can I.
Other shows have done that we have been obsessed with. And yet, people suck. So...
Look, guys, if you want to support Astrid and Lily, you gotta tell Sci-Fi that you want that second season. Watch the show, rewatch the show on Sci-Fi's website or app, if possible, if not on the network itself, and tweet at them or post on Instagram, comment on TikTok, all of it. Tell them how much you want a second season, because we have so many more stories to tell in this universe. I could write these characters, by which I mean Candace and Lily, but also the others, I guess, for the rest of my life. Well, also Eggs and Valerie.
So
I love our entire cast.
So
I want to write them for the rest of my life.
Just all of them.
Yes.
Excellent.
Yes, please. All right, let's do this. We're ready for our Q and Gay. Let's go.
Q and Gay.
All right, question number one. What is your worst Astrid and Lily demon? A, Memuragatu. B, Hair Cocoon. C, Tearjerker. Or D, Razor.
Like, which one would be the worst for me to face?
Yeah.
Oh, Memuragatu, easily. Hair Monster is just like what I have to pull out of my shower drain. I'm not that scared.
That's a good zinger if you had to say that. Amazing.
Okay, question two.
I have very long hair, guys.
Question two. What's your worst real life demon out of A, friend breakup, B, being unpopular, C, peer pressure, or D, overbearing parents?
Oh, friend breakup. Definitely.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I was never popular, so peer pressure and a fear of losing your popularity don't really resonate with me. I wasn't cool enough to have either of those things. friend breakup, easily.
I get that, too. That would definitely be mine. All right, question number three. Who were you in your high school theater production? A, lead role. B, ensemble. C, prop person. Or D, audience?
None of the above. I wrote and directed a lot.
That tracks.
Which, you know, huge surprise considering where I ended up. But yeah, I was usually the one writing. And then for the school play, I assist and directed.
Who nice. Do we talk to get a full length version of Romeo and Juliet Down Under? That's what I want to know. Somebody has to, I want like a high school version of this show.
How much funding do we need to license?
Yeah, right? Listen, I
look,
make it happen.
Guys, hit up Blue Ice. I'm waiting on a season two renewal. I'm happy to write it. Like, I got my Romeo and Juliet script on my bookshelf. I'm ready to go. Hilarious. I can contact my cousin for more Australian slang. Like, guys, I'm ready.
You're so ready.
We'll license it, and then, you know, halfway through the production, they'll decide to change the ending because the buses got there early. And
if you decide you want to make it a musical, hit us up, okay? Broadway, we're coming for you. Listen.
Yes. I got you. Yes, a gay please. Musical, obviously.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah. I just got very excited about this. It's fine. question four. Which superpower would you want out of A, Astrid's senses, or B, Lily's leg?
Oh, God, that's hard. They both suck. I'm going to go with the senses because at least Astrid gets a cool moment. Sometimes Lily is just the one leg. Lily has the vowel superpowers. Here. Like, I should. Yeah, I mean, I think I can handle the vinegar smell that she gets sometimes in exchange for the occasional instance of super sight. Okay. I'll go with Astrid's powers.
Nice.
Fair enough.
All right, question number five. Which Astrid and Lily character are you most like? A, Astrid, B, Lily, C, Candace, or D, Val?
I mean...
You can do a write-in when you're in the episode, too, so...
Yeah, I was about to say, So, I mean, I was Val in high school. They all resonate with me in a different way. So this is going to be kind of a smorgasbord of an answer. In general, I would say I'm most like Lily until I get comfortable around someone and then my Astrid starts showing. But in terms of the R universe in general, I'm probably X.
That's a good choice.
I'm pretty sure I'm an eggs too, so it's fine.
Yeah,
it's a great choice.
I don't quite have his aptitude for science, but I do have his aptitude for can we focus on the issue at hand? So,
I think that was my favorite eggs moment was during the Breakfast Club scene when Michelle's like, why are you here? It's the library. Like, yes.
Which was also very much correct. Me in high school. So if I had to pick... I'm probably eggs.
I love it. We gotta add eggs. We gotta add eggs to the question five.
Remember, I think you do.
We really do. Remember, you can give us your own answers to this episode's Q&A questions on our Twitter at @LesHangoutPod. Alex, thank you so much for hanging out with us and for writing this incredible show. So cool.
Thank you for having me. It's been an honor, and thanks for watching.
Tell our listeners, where can they find you if they want to follow you? And I know we just said it, but tell them again, where can they find Astrid and Lily to catch up, watch, follow, all the things?
So if you want to follow me, I am at MarkWoman on Twitter and Instagram. I'm also on TikTok, but I don't post on TikTok, so why would you follow me there? And if you want to watch the show, which obviously you do after listening to this episode, you can watch it. By the time this comes out, all the episodes will be available, so you can binge them on the Sci-Fi website or app. And in Canada, you can stream them on Crave.
Amazing. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. And to all of you out there, make sure you watch Astrid and Lily so we can get another season.
Please, please.
Please.
Let me hear you say, hip, 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 yeah.
We love hearing from all of you. We love continuing to build this community. We like to shout out some of our favorite things every episode. And during this month, while we are crowdfunding, the people who are nearest and dearest in our hearts and minds are everyone who is donating to our crowdfunding campaign. So we are just going to shout out everyone that has donated since last week.
The ridiculous amount of names. Seriously, you guys are amazing. Maddie.
Lindsay.
Eva.
Tiffany.
Rebecca.
Raina.
Levi.
Samara.
Sarah.
Amelia.
George.
Chris.
Alex.
Jessica.
Rebecca.
Claudia.
Judith.
Amy.
Tiff.
Amanda.
Fran.
Hannah.
Cheyenne.
Beth.
Joyce.
Caitlin.
Amelia.
Yanira.
Kelly.
KK.
Lex.
Diana.
Elise.
Brooke.
Robin.
Noelle, who was our angel donor for our matching campaign. And we also want to thank everybody that helped us make that matching contribution.
Bethany.
And Haley, who brought us to 10K.
Thank you, Haley, Isabel,
and Andrew. Thank you, all of you. Thank you, everyone who's going to have donated since then. If we missed you this week, we should be able to get you by next week. And we're so grateful and humbled and just really, really happy. That's all.
That is so many names, everyone. That is so many names. So thank you all. It was like really so exciting to see the matching campaign happening over the weekend. I was like, oh, they're doing it. They really love us. So thank you. Thank you. And as always, we want to thank our Lesbian Jesus patrons, Mark Foster,
Jess Klaus,
Tanya Ferguson,
Jacqueline Rose Nishino,
Sarah and Julia,
Danny Gunlock Tamura,
Brittany Ray,
Alana Rosen,
Lizette Stye,
Stacy,
A.D. Benitez,
Fiona W.,
Whitney Lennon,
and Jennifer Trujillo.
And our King Princess patrons, Amy and Ellen,
Leah Henley,
Liz Chen,
Julia Gonzalez,
and Ashley White. Thank you all so much for supporting us all year round. Some of you for 4 or 5 years. So thank you. We could not make the show without you.
Remember, you can also find us on all social medias. We are on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and TikTok at Les Hangout Pod.
You can email us at leshangoutpod@gmail.com.
Or you can check out our website at leshangoutpod.com. And you can also find our website for Dollar Bean Productions at dollarbeanproductions.com.
Whatever app you use for podcasts, make sure you subscribe to be the first to know when new episodes drop.
And if you haven't listened to The Flame yet, or if you just want to listen again to help us celebrate our Webby nomination and tell all your friends to vote for us, you can do that. All of the episodes are out on any podcasting app.
We're also posting videos on our YouTube channel, so make sure you subscribe at youtube.com/leshangoutpod to catch them.
If you want to help support the podcast, you can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It helps new people find the show, and we like reading the reviews.
If you want to support us on Patreon so you can hear us talk about Chasing Amy at 150 patrons, you can do that at bit.ly/lespatreon. We have watch parties for our patrons and our favorite, our Patreon-only Discord chat.
If you want to help support us in making all of our podcast musicals, you can join our Patreon at bit.ly/theflamepatreon. Helps us make our next show and helps us bring The Flame onto the stage in New York City this fall.
If you want some Les Hangout merch, you can get that at bit.ly/lesshop. Like we've said before, Pride is closer than you think, so you better get all of your gay merch so you can rock it at the parade.
If you want to follow us individually, you can find me on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at LSH Foster.
You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at Ellie Brigida. With that, I'm Ellie.
And I'm Lee.
And let's hang out again soon.
Let's hang out.